Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the only football show where the rivalry is real, the opinions are biased, and the insults are oddly affectionate.
And what a week it's been. Palace have only gone and won their second trophy in 3 months. Yes, we beat the Premier League champions to take home the Community Shield at Wembley.
Meanwhile, Brighton continued pre-season by brushing aside Wolfsburg. And yes, I'm calling it now. We're looking good and ready for the start of the season.
And just as Palace were getting used to celebrating, Kaz decided to crash the party. Cheers for that.
It's also that time where we're being brave and giving our Premier League predictions. All that with the usual nonsense and a bit of friendly abuse along the way. After all, this is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Neil. How are you?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Not too bad, thank you. Yeah, how are you doing? Are you as smug as you sound?
I was about to say I've had a really good week, but the latter bit of it's kind of ruined it. But it's been another good week to be a Palace fan. Never failed to disappoint recently on the pitch and regularly off the pitch.
It's definitely a roller coaster, isn't it?
Mate, honestly, no. I mean, we alluded to it in the intro, didn't we? Not even any time to celebrate before the barrage of... the barrage of lawyers and Kaz and this Conference League for you, and then it's like players going and like, rah! I mean, yeah. Literally 24 hours. They've literally just put the cup down, haven't they? Or the shield, should I say.
Yeah, the shield, yeah.
Has it been a busy week for Brighton, Neil?
It's been a quiet week, I think, overall.
I would imagine all the Brighton fans are watching the game, though, weren't they? Because they would have all been cheering us on, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they were all cheering on someone. Game, yeah, definitely. It was a fun game, actually. I enjoyed watching it as a neutral. Brighton, they've had a bit of a quiet week, and in some respects that's a good thing, I think, with all the transfer rumours that are flying around and all that sort of stuff. So we've got an action-packed episode, though. We've got a lot to get through, mate.
Oh, do you know what? I don't know if I'm meant to say this, but I'm going to anyway.
Go on.
When I was putting this together, there's loads of news, but there's also no news. How is that even a thing?
Yeah.
Palace, there's two big things.
Yeah.
And there's nothing else.
All right, well, don't oversell it, eh?
But there's loads of rumours and there's loads of stuff that everyone's still talking about. Do you get what I mean?
But we've also got the fun bit as well.
Yeah.
We've got the predictions.
Oh, mate, I'm looking forward to that.
You've got all yours ready, yeah? You haven't just, like, prepped it in the last 2 seconds, have you?
Mate, I've had a week to work on this because nothing else really to talk about up until the weekend. So, yeah, no, we've worked out the predictions and I've got a couple of surprises for you later, actually.
I think
you might be surprised.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be a little bit later. So first, look, there's nowhere else to start, but, well, we've got to start with Kaz. We've got to start with the Court of Arbitration of Sport and the decision that came on Monday.
I didn't call this, Neil, did I?
Yeah, no, you're right. You didn't call it.
I thought common sense would prevail. Little do I know about UEFA. But, you know, being a Palace fan now, we're going to have to start getting used to these things. Yeah, well, look, I mean, let's just talk about it. Palace have failed in overturning UEFA's decision, and obviously we have now been officially demoted. Is that the right word?
Yeah, let's use that.
Smacked around, pushed into the Conference League. Obviously, look, the Kaz hearing was held on Friday, and the decision was announced on Monday morning. Should we read out what Kaz said?
Oh, yeah, go on then.
It's only short. It says, after considering the evidence. The panel found that John Textor, founder of Eagle Football Holdings, had shares in CPFC and Lyon and was a board member with decisive influence over both clubs at the time of UEFA's assessment date. The panel also dismissed the argument by CPFC that they received unfair treatment in comparison to Nottingham Forest and Lyon. The panel considered that UEFA regulations are clear and do not provide flexibility to clubs that are non-compliant on the assessment date, as CPFC claimed.
Yeah, so overall that means Nottingham Forest, after writing their little letter to UEFA, will get their spot in the Europa League and you are...
It's not their spot, is it? They didn't own it.
Fair point. Yeah. Get your spot in the Europa League and you're in the Conference League.
I hope they choke on it. I really do. And do you know what? The only thing that could annoy me more now is if they go on and win it. But I don't think that's probably the case. But I think, look, from my perspective, it going to Kaz, I think we... as Palace fans potentially overestimated the ability that the Kaz hearing would have, if that makes sense. Yeah, because in essence, it's not a legal hearing. The example being, we asked for evidence to be shared with us and disclosed, I guess is the word
I'm trying to find.
Right? Yeah, yeah. That was refused. Mm-hmm. Why would you refuse that? Because there was something to hide, right? And I think that from a Kaz point of view, it's very much there was a deadline, Crystal Palace, and you didn't hit the deadline. What we didn't get to the bottom of or didn't discuss or couldn't, and Steve Parrish's frustrations with all of this was more about the reasons why we didn't do the deadline. Everyone knows we didn't do it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're not saying we did it.
Yeah, yeah.
What we're saying is there's valid reasons and arguments why we didn't do it, and why was it then anyway? So I think that's the issue, which is we've tried to fight a decision at a place where actually that decision really probably couldn't be overturned, because that all the Kaz are looking at is a black and white.
Yeah,
UEFA were the ones that could have stopped all this from happening with what everybody's saying. And no jokes, I mean, there's a lot of Nottingham Forest fans who disagree with this. Probably a few Brighton fans that disagree with
this. There's a lot of Brighton fans that disagree with
it. The rest of the footballing world can see that actually what's ended up happening now doesn't benefit anybody in the footballing world apart from Nottingham Forest. You kind of look at it and you go, right, so Palace won the FA Cup, earned their right to play in the Europa League, right? That's sporting merit. That's physical sporting merit.
On the pitch, absolutely.
Right? Now, what's actually ended up happening, if you forget about kind of how it's all happened, but from start to now, all the way to the finish, is to you've got two clubs who have now ended up in the Europa League, right? Lyon are in there. Why are Lyon in there? Nottingham Forest finished where in the league? Seventh?
Yeah.
So you've got two teams who are now in the Europa League, who haven't even got a qualifier for it and go to bloody Norway or wherever, right? They're now in the Europa League. And also, Neil, this is the real annoyance of it all. Palace, no multi-club ownership, certainly not anymore, right? Two teams that have qualified without merit, without sporting merit, and without even actually qualifying for the competition, they've ended up by default or by snitching their way in, both multi-club models.
Yeah.
How is that progress, sporting merit, and good for football?
Yeah, I mean, I think just to sort of mention my thoughts on this.
I just appreciate you waiting to the end of that rant.
There was definitely no stopping.
Thank you.
There's no way I was getting in the way of that. I think UEFA deciding to finally take a stand against multi-club ownership model is a good thing, but them choosing a small, and no offence, but a small non-multi-club team, so that they chose a team that they could bully, they could pick on, and they could make a decision out of it, and they could prove in a weird way that they're doing something about multi-club ownership.
By letting two multi-club ownership clubs in the competition and chucking out the one that hasn't.
There's loads of things going around. You know, when you look at all the different clubs, and we could sit here forever. We could talk about Strasbourg and Chelsea, for instance, and the fact that Strasbourg miraculously were doing so well this season, and then they lost their last two games of the season to much lower in the league position teams. Which was a good thing, because otherwise they would have been ahead of Chelsea and taken Chelsea's spot in the Champions League. So there's all these different things that have happened, and they will continue to happen until UEFA either make a decision and go, you're not allowed it, or you are allowed it. What they've done here is they've fudged it. I think the biggest issue is the fact that they've chosen this moment, and you've been, you know, stuck right in that perfect storm of a moment as Palace. And I think, you know, it is a shame for football. It is. I totally agree.
And look, Neil, I've been listening to everything, because you can obviously imagine. I've been listening to everything that's been in the media about all of this, right? Mm. And just to clarify, just because obviously last time we spoke about this, three or four pods back, I lost my stuff about it all.
Oh, yeah.
And you were quite passionate from a Brighton fan, giving your perspective in terms of, but you should have done it, Andy. You should have done it.
Yeah.
And I get all of that.
It's just purely, I think at that moment in time, all I was talking about was the fact that I could see a lot of certain Palace fans.
Mm.
You know, social media, unfortunately, is a bit of a marketplace for this sort of thing. And you could see a lot of people looking at it as if it was 100% not Palace's fault. And all I was trying to make the point was that, you know, there are are elements of this that Palace could have done something about it. I totally understand why they didn't.
No, I get
totally
it, Neil.
Understand it.
I get it, Neil.
That was the point. At that moment in time, that was the point I was trying to make.
I'm with you.
On a footballing merit point of view, this is just a mess.
Oh, mate,
it's just a shame.
Footballing merit aside, though, I think this is the issue. And even I was listening to, what was it, Talk Sport earlier. Mm. And obviously our previous owner, Simon Jordan, right? He was on there. And, like, he knows a lot about all of this. Yeah. And he quite rightly was saying, like, Palace could have stopped this from happening.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And technically Steve Parish could have stopped this from happening because he let someone invest in the club, and therefore then they went and bought another club, right? And that's the thing everyone needs to and everyone forgets, which is that we didn't enter into a multi-club ownership.
No, not at all.
Someone bought into our club and bought some shares, and then bought another club, and then bought another club, and then bought another club, and then made a friend with Marinakis.
Yeah.
So I think the issue being is that even if the greatest hindsight in the world at that day, in back when we played Millwall in the fourth round or whenever it was of the FA Cup, right? Mm. When that March the 1st deadline was, if we'd have had that hindsight, like everyone in the media now, who it's so easy to say, well, you should have done it, right? If we'd have done that, right, and it had hit the news that Palace have put their shares into a blind trust or Texas because they think they're going to win the FA Cup, we would have been laughed at, Neil.
But then you would have had the last laugh because you would have been in Europa League.
Oh, no, I know. But are you telling me, as a Brighton fan, you would have literally weed your pants with laughter at the thought that we thought that that was going to happen, with that series of events was going to play out?
No,
and this is my point. They put a March the 1st deadline on, and if that March the 1st deadline was on, and then the effect of the 24th of May, a cup in France affected it, and us winning a cup on the 22nd of May, how is that okay?
No,
it's not, mate. Do you want to quickly just talk about this statement that Palace put out? Because it's proper scathing. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Neil, you haven't seen this, have you?
No,
it's
I
only
haven't.
Just come out.
No.
This is brave.
Okay.
So let me get your reaction then if you haven't seen this.
Go for it.
At a time when we should be celebrating our victory in the Community Shield at Wembley, the decision by UEFA and followed by the Court of Arbitration for Sport shows the sporting merit is rendered meaningless. When we won the FA Cup against Man City on that momentous day in May, our manager and players earned the right to play Europa League football. We have been denied that opportunity. It gets worse, right? It appears that certain clubs, organisations and individuals have a unique privilege and power. It gets worse. This growing and unhealthy influence has shattered the hopes and dreams of Crystal Palace supporters and does not bode well for aspirational teams all over Europe competing to progress when rules and sanctions are unevenly applied in the most flagrant way.
Wow.
Multi-club structures hide behind the charade of a blind trust, while clubs such as ours have no connection to any other club whatsoever, are prevented from playing in the same competition. To compound the injustice, clubs that appear to have a huge informal arrangement with each other are also allowed to participate and even possibly play against each other. Who the hell could he be referring to, Neil? I think that's with reference to Leon and Nottingham Forest, who seem to trade players like top Trump's cards.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes a good point. He says, while we respect the CAS tribunal members, the process is designed to severely restrict and, in our case, make it almost impossible to receive a fair hearing. The denial of all disclosure requests, as we talked about earlier, to obtain correspondence between the relevant parties, the refusal to allow witness testimony from those involved, and the general lack of formality and respect for law means decisions cannot be properly challenged, leading to predetermined outcomes. So they're now looking at whether there's another level, and they believe that we could potentially, not in terms of overturning Conference League and Europa, but I think the rules might end up getting changed going forward. And it says, UEFA's decisions had wider implications on the governance of sport. A combination of poorly conceived regulations and their unequal application means our brilliant fans will be deprived of the chance to watch this team compete in the Europa League for the first time in our history. This should be a turning point for football. UEFA must fulfil its mandate and pass coherent rules which are properly communicated and applied with reasonable cure periods to resolve uncertainty and consistent sanctions. And that's a good point, because if at any point there was a point to double check people's understanding of them rules before it goes too far, that should have happened. Treating all clubs equally with a proper appeal process. Last sentence. The European Court of Justice has made it clear that rulings similar to this will be under greater scrutiny from the national courts in future. Only then will fairness and due process be granted to every team.
I think that's actually a really good statement. I think it's probably what a lot of clubs, what a lot of people think, well, fans definitely think about it.
I missed the last paragraph, mate.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Because, I mean, we're not trying to get out of it because we've said, although we continue to take legal advice on the next steps, we will be competing in the Conference League with the same determination and will to win that characterises this incredible club. So we've admitted we're going into Conference League.
Okay, well, look, I think we all have probably exhausted this subject for a lot of weeks because it's been such a huge, big issue. And unfortunately, from a Crystal Palace point of view, it's not gone your way. And I'm sorry, mate, honestly, I am for that.
I appreciate the Brighton fans for not... do you know what? I think it's... Whilst there is a rivalry between us, I think Brighton not sticking the boot in and trying to gain any kind of opportunity out of it, and also the sensibleness of the Brighton fans, but knowing that you could be in this same situation, and it's just not okay, is it?
No, it's not.
My closing statement on this, to really draw a line under it, is that I'm sure the majority of our listeners would have, from Palace perspective, might have been at Wembley, and if not, they watched it on telly. They will know that chant that the Homesdale fanatics were chanting. quite a blunt and blunt statement, and that is my views on this situation. It is as simple as that. It's absolutely ludicrous. But we will go on and we will win the Conference League. And that is the biggest middle finger to UEFA we can do right now.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Right, I've composed myself now, Neil. I'm ready to carry on. I've had a couple of deep breaths, bit of yoga. Shall we have a change of pace? You're still in pre-season mode.
We are, yes, just about.
And you had a home game, I believe.
We did. We had our final... Pre-season of the season.
Go with that.
Yeah, that works. We played Wolfsburg at the Amex.
Neil, just before you go into this, can I just for clarity reasons, I need to know how impressed I need to be about Brighton's performance.
What do you mean?
Well, look, my knowledge ain't great in terms of German team, right? German team,
correct.
I'm assuming.
That's a good start.
And are they any good? Because they're not a team that you hear about often.
Yeah, I see what you mean. They've had a few journeys into Europe, but not much. Wolfsburg, pretty much a sort of a, I think last season in the Bundesliga, the top league in Germany, they finished 11th of an 18-team league. So pretty much mid-table, the Crystal Palace of Bundesliga.
Well, I mean, they'd be 12th if the Blue Palace.
There's only 18 teams, Andy.
Yeah. Go on, tell us how your day went then.
It was an interesting game, actually, because yet again, Albion and Fabian Herzer loves their 2-for-1 offer of football games. So they had two games played, one around lunchtime, I think it was quite early, 11, 12 o'clock in the afternoon. Brighton won the first game 2-0 at the training ground, Gruder and Sarmiento with the goals. And, newsflash, one of our Greek lads... The number 9 striker, Simas, he got on the pitch.
Did he?
He got a whole...
What, was he a ball boy?
He got a... He got 5 minutes, Andy.
Oh, okay. So what's that? How many million pounds for a minute is that?
Yeah.
Crikey.
Don't get me started. So 5 minutes he got, and we didn't hear about what happened on that game. It was obviously not televised or anything like that. We saw highlights afterwards. And then the second game, though, was the showpiece one, really, at the Amex. The second game was 2-1 to Brighton.
Got a win.
Yep, got a win. Another one.
Is that you unbeaten, by the way?
Yeah, we haven't lost in pre-season. It doesn't really mean much, does it? But I mean,
it's
good for morale. I agree. Yeah, we haven't lost any of them, even the double headers and things. We haven't lost any. So, goals from Jorginho Rutter and our new boy Maxim de Kuyper from left back also scored. And I was quite impressed with him, actually. I think overall what I would say from a takeaway of the game is that we probably didn't look that secure at the back. There were quite a few occasions, I say quite a few, maybe five occasions where we were just pressing so high up that three first-time passes and they were in our half on their own, like two players. Like, it was ridiculous, yeah. Verbruggen played his first game for pre-season since he came back from his injury, which was good, and he saved us, to be fair, about three or four really good saves. So nothing new there, worrying at the back a little bit because of the style that we're trying to play, I suppose. But what I would say is moving forward and attacking-wise and the pressure and everything was there again. Really high running stats, I would imagine. So, yeah, I mean, it was good to watch. It was a good game. It was eventful. But still no Kostoulas, even though Fabian Hertzler did say the week before that he would probably feature at some point, didn't feature. As I say, Simas only got 5 minutes in the early game as well. No Belaba either. Man U fans went crazy for that, thinking...
I was going to say, where could he possibly be?
No, he's been injured for about 3 games. He's been injured for about 2 weeks now.
Pre-season injuries.
No, he's got a knee injury. Yeah, he's had it for about 2 weeks now. And he was back in training on Friday, so it was just a bit too soon, the friendly came. So
we'll talk about that later.
We definitely will. I've got a few points to make there. I mean, overall, I think... we're going to have to be patient for those Greek lads to really sort of gain their fitness and strength up. And we've got a big enough squad already to not worry about it too much. I would say that I think overall the preseason's been really good. I think it's obviously been a preseason designed by the manager and what he wanted. We didn't do any big tours. We didn't really go anywhere that far. We did a lot of games behind closed doors. They went away in a training camp, obviously, as we know, we talked about with Gary, our roving reporter.
How's that?
There's just been lots of really good feedback coming out of it. And I think what they're trying to do is build a team, build a morale, you know, build a group of people that want to work hard for each other. And I think that seems to be the key for the preseason. So overall, yeah, pretty happy with it. I am a little concerned that we're going into the season with Danny Welbeck as our sort of main striker. And at the moment, Jorginho Rutta seems to be playing there as well sometimes, which I don't think works, but we'll have to wait and see. So yeah, it was a good end to the pre-season and just roll on Saturday against Fulham. I'm really looking forward to it. So Palace, what did they get up to on the weekend? I can't remember.
Oh, not much, mate. Just, well, I mean, should we start off by absolutely upsetting anyone who's an Arsenal fan who would never be listening anyway? But I mean, we've just achieved what Arteta's trying to do for, was it 6 years? He's got a FA Cup and a Community Shield. And Glasner's done it in probably the same amount of weeks.
Well, I mean, he could be on his way to Arsenal yet, so.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. We'll save that for another podcast. But yes, it's been a hell of a week. And putting all of the CAS stuff and the UEFA stuff aside, yes, Palace have won a trophy that, let's all be honest here, if you lose it on the Community Shield day, if you lose that game, you say it's a glorified friendly.
It's a glorified friendly.
If you win it, it's a major trophy.
It's a major trophy.
And it's one of them, isn't it?
It's totally one of them, right? It means nothing if you lose it. It's absolutely nothing. Well, it's just like, you know, we've just been getting our minutes up. We're just making sure everyone's fit. You know, if you win it, it's like, you know what we're going to do this season? We're going to go all the way.
Yeah. I mean, there's no better start, or there's no better end to a pre-season or start to a season, however you want to look at it, than rocking up to Wembley and bossing it and lifting the trophy and going, we're ready for this.
Mate, it's not a pre-season game. You're absolutely right. Yeah. This is a proper game of football. It was lovely to be honest, from a personal point of view, it was just nice to have a proper game of football on the pit.
It was a good TV game, though, wasn't it?
Do you know what I mean? Like, it was really nice. It was a really good start from Liverpool, wasn't it?
Oh, mate.
Honestly, when that first goal went in, I was on my WhatsApp to my group. I was like, come on, this is the first of seven today. Come on, Liverpool, this is going to be loads. Didn't quite work out like that.
In my prediction last week, I didn't get it right.
Well,
I
you almost did.
I almost did. I think I said 1-1 and we end up at 2-2, but I did say it would go to penalties.
You did.
And we got there. And I think we talked a bit last week about, just very quickly, about how Palace not making any transfers for this specific reason was a benefit.
Oh, yeah, right? Totally.
Liverpool rocked up with this all-star team, very similar to the one that my son's trying to kind of conjure up on FIFA at the moment.
I think we all are.
Where, like, you know, you've got all these players. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And when we were sat there and they read out the team sheet and all the Palace fans were just like, oh, no. Even though everyone knew, but you just listen to it in real life and you're like, oh, this is going to be a long day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you our team sheet was read out and all the pictures come up and you're like, no, actually, we've got, no, do you know what? We might, like, we've got good players, right? Mm-hmm. And we are on form. They've had a good, decent pre-season and we've won here before, right? So I had a bit of a doubt in my mind, which swiftly followed when that first goal went in. But if you wouldn't mind, just wanted to rewind a little bit, because there was a few things that happened prior to kickoff. When the national anthem was sang,
yeah,
I was absolutely shocked and appalled at the Liverpool fans booing throughout the whole thing, which I thought was just really unnecessarily not in the spirit of the situation. And also, that poor singer who was singing that song to the boos around the one half of the stadium as the other half was singing along, I don't know, not particularly needed.
No, it's not needed. Liverpool, I won't go into it. Obviously, I think we probably know. If you don't know, guys, just Google it. But Liverpool have got a, you know, long-standing issue with the national anthem and what it means to them and other issues and things. But yeah, you're right. I think on a day like that, with lots of servicemen and women there present as well. And
stood on the pitch, holding their...
It was a little bit of a tough listen, but...
But then it got worse.
I was about to say, then it got a little bit worse, though, didn't it? Let's be honest.
Obviously, the minute silence for Jota. Well, to start off with, obviously, a wreath was laid and obviously representatives from our club and so on. And it was all going okay. It was all like the Palace fans were being respectful, as we should, because, you know, we are...
Well, we're all human beings.
Exactly, right? And I think when the minute silence was started, the whistle was blown. It was all okay. And then one sultry Palace fan shouted Eagles very loudly, which was then followed by multiple other fans shouting, shut up, you know, whatever it would be. And then it all started. And there's a couple of fan groups that have come out on Facebook and said that there was a big contingent of Palace fans who arrived late in that big main area. So there was some kind of understanding that potentially they could have got through the concourse and kind of walked in and like, but I think...
So you're from you were there, mate.
Yeah.
Your point of view.
Yeah.
What do you feel happened?
I feel that it was a rogue, maybe very drunk, not a Palace through and through fan who made an absolutely disgusting decision. The problem is, though, when you're in a live environment like that, the reaction is worse than the actual...
Yeah. Compounds it, doesn't it?
Do you get what I'm saying? And then the Liverpool fans kick off and then the referee blows the whistle on a minute's silence, which actually lasted about 30 seconds.
Yeah,
it's
about 28 seconds.
And I think the thing to consider here is that there was about between 35 and 37,000 Palace fans there. Selhurst Park only holds 26, right? And we are known for our rowdy chanting. We're known for our atmosphere, even more so recently. What we're not known for is attacking or...
I don't think anyone would say that Palace are those types of fans. I think you have to look at it in its...
It's an isolated incident, Neil.
Yeah, in its incident and just go, look, it was sad. It was really disappointing. It was a really big shame. And I hope whoever was standing next to the people that made those noises, whether it was one, whether it was 10, whatever it was, made sure that they realised what they'd done. If they didn't before, they do now, hopefully over the press that they've got from it. So
I do hope it's what I thought it was, where someone's walked in from the concourse straight from the pub and completely just got it wrong, because that's not who we are as a club. And
bottom line
is, that mortified.
Yeah, bottom line is, it wasn't good. It wasn't a great start. Yeah. But let's just move on to the game.
Talking of not a great start, that goal from Ekitike, it looked as if we were the victims of Liverpool 2.0 showcase from the offset, right? Yeah. It was like, oh, here we go, 4 minutes. So much so, I turned around to my son and prepared him for the long game. Is the truth of the matter. 14 minutes in, Henderson makes a remarkable save. And then I'm thinking to myself, hang on, we might be up for this. Obviously, that was a good shot from Gakpo. But then I felt like the fight back began. I felt like we settled a little bit. We got over the kind of the initial barrage. We started pressing high, playing some nice direct football, and then that whole penalty situation happened. Eze squared it to Sarr, got, and then Sarr obviously got completely wiped out by Van Dijk. And I don't think that was ever under any...
I think when you first saw it on the TV, it looked a little soft, but then when you actually saw it sort of at a different angle, and yeah. particularly the angle that the referee had, I think you could understand why it was given. I think it was one of those that if the ref hadn't given it, maybe the VAR wouldn't have overturned it, but as
well,
the ref
I'm
did
glad
give
they
it,
did. Mateta stepped up, calm, collected, goal, right? Yeah. And it was a good penalty as well. He didn't piss about. He just went straight in.
Yep.
Game on, right? 1-1. Okay, thinking to myself, right, let's go for this. The Palace fans went absolutely crazy, chanting, atmosphere as normal, all good. Then comes that goal that was a cross. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And don't forget, I was right in front of him. I was 14 rows back from the pitch. I saw him cross that ball with his head down.
I don't think he was even pretending it was a shot, mate.
I haven't looked into it. Yeah. But he looked up, and the surprise on his face when he saw where Henderson was and it go over the top of him, it was quite something.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the overall, as a neutral watching the game, I think the first 15, 20 minutes, I think, was mostly Liverpool keeping possession, doing very much like the FA Cup final, really, with the Man City game, where, you know, one team was trying, obviously, what they normally do, which is keep possession, and the other team doing what they normally do, looking for an opportunity to counterattack. But they didn't get many opportunities, Palace. They actually, Liverpool did really well in that first sort of 25 minutes or so. I appreciate they did get a penalty against them, but otherwise, it was pretty much what I was expecting to see, sort of that Liverpool press and keeping hold of the ball and all that. And I was thinking, oh, there's more goals in this, and Liverpool could, you know, especially when they got the second, I was thinking, oh, here we go. This could, you know, ramp up a bit more. They could keep going. But it didn't really work out like that.
Well, I think a turning point for me was obviously Kamada, who wasn't having a bad game. He came off injured. He's only going to be out for a couple of weeks, we've heard.
That's good.
But he was replaced by Will Hughes. who I think have just a massive positive influence on this game. And actually, when he came on, I felt like it changed the premise of what we were doing.
Yeah.
There was hustling, there was crunching tackles, there was, you know, world-class players from Liverpool that he was playing up against, and he was outsmarting them, and he gave them no room. So I feel like he was the point. Obviously, we didn't get another goal back or anything like that, or we didn't make too much of a difference, but we held our own until half-time. And then in the second half, believe it or not, I was shocked by this. It's a fact. We had about 70% of the possession for a very long period of that. And I didn't realise this until I watched it back or found somewhere to watch it. It's quite difficult
Liverpool,
the next day.
Liverpool got to about 55 minutes-ish just before the hour or so, and you could just see the players, they started to tire, they sat back a bit, things started to change. And I tell you, the one change that I noticed more than anything, probably as a neutral, was Adam Wharton got on the ball more.
Yes.
And I think that made a big difference.
He had a bit more space to do some stuff.
He had a bit more space. Suddenly Liverpool weren't quite as heavy on the press, and he had a bit more space to play the passes that he can play.
We could have scored two or three on a different day during that period. And there was a definite feeling from the Palace end at that point that something special was going to happen. A bit of a buzz about the place, which was, actually, we might be able to do this. Crowd got louder, team press worked hard, chances being created. Then a superb through ball from Wharton. Absolutely superb. Look, it was a great finish from Saar. Very similar to the FA Cup semi-final against Villa, that run on. He knew he was scoring that as soon as he was running. It was brilliant. And do you know what? He's now scored 4 goals at Wembley in 2025.
Blimey.
That's a hell of an achievement.
That's depressing, yeah.
Yeah. So we even had a few chances to win it before full-time with Deveni just inching white. I mean, that would have been a hell of a story. Yeah. But obviously, he made his moment in history, as we know. And then it went to penalty shootouts. And last time we won a penalty shootout was 21 years ago, Neil, against Sunderland in the First Division semi-final playoff.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Well, look, you tried your hardest to lose this one, didn't you? I mean, it wasn't a great penalty shootout, really, from either side to start with. There was quite a few missed penalties, wasn't there?
Well, look, when Salah gets up and misses, you start thinking to yourself, are the Wembley gods on our side again? Because he don't often miss, and he pelted it right over. And then Mateta scores, and we're thinking, hang on a minute here. And then, of course, Henderson saves McAllister.
Yeah, that was a good save, yeah.
His penalty. And that was exactly what the water bottle said to do, which was great. And then, of course, Eze steps up and does an absolutely ridiculous dance like he did before. Do you remember this we got him for this?
Right, St James's Park.
Yeah, and he misses another embarrassing penalty. I just don't know why he doesn't just smack it in like everybody else does. This is not about vanity, Eze. Anyway, and then Sarr and Gakpo both score strong penalties. I remember Gakpo's one thinking, yep, you knew what you were doing there. and then Hendo saves Harvey Elliott's. And the game is ours to win. And again, I was surrounded by very anxious people, right? Including my son.
Yeah.
And we're all stood there in the moment thinking, which one of these is the last one? Who's got a score?
Yeah.
What happened? Because no one tells you, do they?
No, but and also I think because it was such an erratic performance from both teams in the penalty shootout that it was quite difficult to count, to be fair.
It was with the way it all happened.
Yeah.
And then obviously we had the chance to win it, didn't we, with Eze? So obviously then it was when Deveni stepped up, everyone was going, right, hang on a minute, if he gets this, we've won. If he gets this, we've won. And then apparently Glasner didn't pre-pick five.
Okay.
Because he said he didn't know who was going to be on the pitch at that time.
Fair point.
So Deveni, while they were in the huddle, immediately volunteered and went, I'll do number five. Bearing in mind, right, this kid's 21-year-old, right? He only really had his breakout year last year. And what a good penalty that was. And then afterwards, even though we thought we'd done the maths, he took that penalty, ran off, celebrated, and we're all looking around at each other going, there was a slight delay again, which was...
Have we just
won another one? Is that
yes,
a real thing?
Yes, you've won another one.
And yeah, so there we go. It was a wonderful day out. Not quite the tears at Wembley that there were before. Because let's be honest, Neil, they're like buses now. We're getting used to this.
Oh, here we go.
No, I'm joking. But it was great. And then we've got a little... Just, if you wouldn't mind me, just another 30 seconds.
Because go on, mate.
We have got a bit of a Seagull Ego exclusive.
Oh, here. I'm up for this. Go on, what we got?
Well, for those of you who know, obviously, we had a week off on the pod because I did my knee in and I've ended up in crutches, right? So I was being careful when I was at Wembley and obviously, bless my son, he was looking after me, making sure that I didn't celebrate too hard and things like this. But obviously, I took my time after watching the two cup lifts that they do, or the shield lift or whatever they want to call it, one on the pitch and all that.
Yeah.
And then we stayed around and I took my time to leave.
Yeah, course,
and obviously, then I had to hobble all the way around pretty much three quarters of Wembley to get back to the car park,
right,
which is where we parked.
Blimey.
And as you can imagine, that was probably a good, 35 minutes or whatever we took to get round there. And by the time we got back to the car park, we realised that where we'd parked in one of the official Wembley car parks is exactly the same place as where the players' cars were waiting for them.
Oh, okay.
Which is absolutely crazy, because you would have thought they'd be sat there in some kind of secret tunnel in Wembley waiting to pick them up. Oh, no. What did we walk into? We walked into Chaddy Riyad, who gave us a Seagull Ego exclusive. Mm. I asked him how long he was going to be out for, because obviously he's back in training now. He still reckons it's going to be a month or so.
Okay.
So maybe around the six-week mark, but he feels good and he's close to returning.
Oh, okay. So probably after the international break, then he'll be about.
Which
okay.
is good. We also had the most surreal moment ever. Shortly after speaking to Chaddy Riyad, carried on walking, got to the entrance of this car park. And who did we see sitting on a wall on his own in a car park? Will Hughes.
Blimey.
So this man's just won the Community Shield at Wembley. What does he do to celebrate? He goes and sits on a wall on his own in a car park.
He's got no friends.
How weird is that, right? And we stumble across him and he speaks to us, which was lovely. And he says, all right. And he speaks to my son and obviously my friend Chris and his son Samuel came along. And he asks the kids if they want a photo. And we have a conversation with Will. I say to him, mate, I think that you played a key role in that game. In fact, I think you turned that game for us. To which his reply was the most humble reply I've ever seen. As if, you know, like when you're at school and you go, my mate fancies you. And then there's like that, that was the kind of reply that we got from him, which was, don't be so ridiculous, not me. Not little old me sat on a wall outside Wembley. What a lovely guy. You wouldn't realise he's such a beast on the pitch. He'll kill you on the pitch, but kill you with kindness outside of it. Lovely guy. We also bumped into Franca and he confirmed that he's still injured again. And he'll be out for the first few games of the season at least. And we did see Henderson getting into the car. We didn't bother him because he was with his family. But what was interesting, and a lovely story again, I love Henderson because he's so with the fans.
Yeah, he is.
He left that car park where I was stood, went a mile up the road, left his family in the car, got out of the car, went into the Palace pub that had been assigned, where all the Palace literally just walked in on his own, went to the bar, put a grand behind the bar, and made an announcement in the pub to much a roar that the drinks were on him.
Oh, wow.
Got as many photos as he could before his family got annoyed in the car and drove off again.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that awesome story?
That is really awesome.
Yeah.
That's the kind of player you want, isn't it, in your team. That's brilliant.
Wicked. And that, Neil, was my day out. I'm sorry, Brighton fans. You will get your moment. I know you will. But that was my day out. And thank you, Palace, because if it all goes absolutely peak tong now, which it probably will, we've had three wonderful days out of Wembley, and my son still believes that Palace will win every game that he goes to at Wembley because he's unbeaten. Madness. What an era of football. I've waited my whole lifetime for this. Within 2 months, he's seen Palace win three games and two cups. There you go.
We'll see you in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. This is Seagull Eagle, and now I'm looking forward to this bit, mate. You know what it's time for?
Oh, Neil.
We're going to do our predictions.
It begins again.
So exciting.
And do you know what we said last week, didn't we? We haven't had a chance to do this yet because we started the pod midway through last season. So we did an end of season kind of review.
Yep.
But now is the chance to set our predictions, which, let's be honest, they're not going to age well.
No, they're probably not.
They're really not.
Even worse, when we're talking about players that we don't even know are going to stay or they're going to go or what, with the window opens, well, anything could happen yet. But we've got to go with it. The first game this weekend, let's go with our predictions. And what we thought we'd do this time is we've got a handful of predictions that are very sort of club-related, Seagulls and Eagles, but we've also got a handful of predictions that are more generic around the league as well.
Yeah. Oh, mate, we've just left ourselves wide open is what we're going to do. So much content for everyone to bash us about later.
But well, look, let's get started. Let's keep it club-related first, okay? Let's do these.
Do you want the first category, Neil?
Go on, what are they?
The first category is top scorer for Brighton first.
Right.
In all competitions, we'll go.
Got so many players, Andy. So many players.
Don't show off.
I've had a bit of a think about this. Now, currently, I'm going on what I can see on pre-season, which obviously might change. But currently, Fabian Hoesler likes to play and has been playing Jorginho Rutter either in the 10 or in the number 9. So in that central position, up front or just behind. And I think this is his season to be top scorer. I think Welbeck is too much of a risk injury-wise to stay all season. I think we've got young players that will be in and out a little bit as well. Unless something happens in the transfer window, I don't see us signing a big number 9 or anything. So I think Jorginho Rutter is going to be it. And I think he has the ability to score lots of goals. He scored a wonderful goal against Wolfsburg on the weekend. And he may even become our penalty taker. I don't know. So
that does help.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. So I'm putting it out there. I think Jorginho Rutter will be our top scorer this season.
Okay, cool. For Palace.
Go on.
I mean, there's no shocker here.
Henderson?
There is no striker better than Jean-Philippe Mateta. So he's in there. And I don't think there's a single Palace fan that would argue with that. I think that Saar will contribute a decent amount of goals as well for us next year.
Yeah.
I think he's well and truly warmed himself up last year. I think he scored 7 or 8 last year for us. So, but yeah, I believe it's Mateta's year. And here's an audacious shout.
Oh, okay.
You ready for this?
We go even further. Go on.
I believe that Jean-Philippe Mateta will be within the top 3 of the Golden Boot.
Oh, in the league?
I don't believe he's going to win the Golden Boot.
Right, okay.
I think he'll be in the top 3.
Wow, that is a big shout.
Yeah.
Okay, with all the amazing strikers that we've got on show this season, you think Mateta's going to be in the top 3?
Mate, he's banging them in for fun at the moment. This is the forum to make the audacious statement.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe that.
I can't believe he will, but
he's actually, from a bookie's point of view, he's in the list. He's in the list.
Of course he's in the list.
No, but in terms of he's in contention, the odds of it, please don't quote me on this, somewhere around the 7 to 5 to 1, 7 to 1 mark. So he's not an outsider on that at all.
Okay, well, that's fair then. Okay, so we're saying Jorginho Rutter and Philippe Mateta. Okay.
Right.
Player of the season is the next one, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, I think you should go first for this one. You tell me who you think the Palace's player of the season will be.
Last season, obviously it was Munez, well deserved.
Yep, yep.
He's going to be in contention this year. I believe, though, that there's a guy that's been under the radar for the whole of last season.
Mm.
We've mentioned him already, it's Sarr. I genuinely believe that he was the unsung hero of last year. And I don't know for what reason, but he's never been the man who everybody talks about, who's linked with everybody. I think that Sarr has had as bigger impact on that team than Eze or Wharton or some of the others that are all being linked away.
Mm.
But for some unknown reason, he doesn't have the rock and roll to go with it or something. I don't know what it is.
No, I think you're right. But I think also what it is he fits a certain style. And if you play that style, he is perfect for you. But that's interesting that you think he's going to be the player of the season.
Well,
he did well last season, didn't he? How many goals did he get last season?
He got 8 goals. And 7 assists last season.
Right.
But do you know what? They're not the stats that I look at.
Mm.
And this is the reason why I genuinely believe he was really in contention last year. He created 17 big chances last year.
Mm.
And he had 29 shots on target, which is not bad for a midfielder.
Right?
Yeah. So I really do believe that this will be his year to shine. So, Sarr, this is your season, my friend. What about you?
So I've gone for Yankuba Minte.
Oh.
He's a young lad. Obviously, we bought him last summer. He had a good season, a good first season in that sense. I think he got 6 goals, 4 assists. As I know you were going to talk about big chances. You like big chances.
Yeah.
He created 18 big chances last season.
Had to go one better, didn't
he? I think he's one of those sort of rough diamonds.
Yeah.
He's shown that this season, that he, as he was progressing through the season, you could see him getting more and more comfortable, understanding what was required of him from Fabian Hörsler with the work rate,
yeah,
understanding his positional sense a lot better. By the end of the season, his ability to morph into either a really fast attacking right winger or at some points, he was like a right wing back defending really against some really high quality wingers.
Mm.
I thought he had a really good end to the season. So from my perspective, I think he's going to improve even further this season and develop even further. His pre-season's been excellent. He scored quite a few goals for the Albion in the pre-season. And I think this season, yeah, this is his one. I think he's going to be suddenly the next one off the rank. I think by the end of this season,
Chelsea player.
Yeah, I think, no, I'm not joking though, but I think that's what it'll be. It'll be one of those, yeah, oh, they found another one. You know, that silly stuff
with
that
you
people talk about.
Yeah.
I think that's what it'll be. Even though everyone knew about him because he should have been at Newcastle, Newcastle will be kicking themselves even more. I think this is Minte's season, and okay, I think by the end of it, he's going to be our player of the season.
Like it. Said in strong tones.
Oh,
well,
go for it. I'm so excited about this season.
Next category.
Go on, what is it?
Star signing.
Oh, yes. Okay.
One that's going to be incredibly difficult for you, but I only have 2 to choose from.
I'm glad that you put signing because it had to be singular because otherwise, yeah, you'd...
Yeah, and I think the rule stipulations are has to be over the age of 18.
I think from your point of view, obviously, I appreciate you've got a limited number at the moment. I'm happy if you want to revisit this at the beginning of September if you want to amend this, because I don't think it's fair that you've only got one option.
I'm quite happy with mine though, to be fair.
Are you? Yeah. Okay, well let's for completeness, let's say it out loud. Andy, who's going to be your star signing of the season?
Borna Sosa.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, only because the keeper's probably not going to play that much. But no, I'm really pleased with Borna Sosa because, look, we talked about this. It's a position that we needed. This wasn't a
fair point.
Let's buy a player and see it. It was like, it's a position we needed, someone we've been looking at for a while. He's got plenty of experience playing in Germany, Italy, Netherlands, Croatia. He's been a big part of that Croatia squad that finished in the 2023 World Cup. And he's looked really good in pre-season. And he looked good at Wembley, right? He played his competitive debut at Wembley. Yes, bless him, he missed that penalty. But technically didn't miss it. It came off the bar. So I think...
That's still a miss.
No, but as in, it's not like he missed the target.
He
like,
did. That's still a missed off target.
Wasn't a Salah.
Doesn't count for target, mate.
But I think he's just looked really, really good. And I think he's going to cause absolute havoc on the wings. And I think the biggest part of this is I didn't think Mitchell had a great game at Wembley. I thought that he was getting bossed, and I didn't think that that was the same case when Sosa came on. And yeah. I think us being able to change what is in effect, a defender coming off,
he's
and
a converted
a
left
on.
Back, isn't he? And Mitchell, sorry, I mean, and Sosa's yeah. more of a converted winger. It's that sort of like hybrid between the yeah. two, and to have that as a choice,
it's brilliant.
When you're playing that shape and saying, you know, this game we need someone who's more attacking, or this game we need someone who's more defensive. I think that's a great choice. Yeah.
What about you?
Well, there's so many, mate. There's so many to pick from.
Which is not always a good thing, let's not forget, right?
No.
All this showing off about all these signings. Disruption, right?
Big disruption.
Big disruption. I remember the year that Palace signed 15 players when we got promoted.
And he's clutching those
And we
scores.
Still didn't have anyone to play.
It's difficult in some respects to make any sort of real judgment from my eyesight, from my experience of seeing the players, because I actually haven't seen many of them in the flesh.
But that's the fun of this, Neil. It's not meant to be easy, mate. All right?
I know. A couple of worthy mentions. I think De Kuyper's going to be very good.
I agree.
I really do. I do think he's going to be a very good signing. But I went a little bit left field here and went, okay, look, if I'm going to nominate someone now, I think it's more because it's what I want to happen.
Okay.
And that is Babis Kostoulas. I'm going for the Greek lad. I'm going for the one that we haven't seen. I'm going for the...
Literally blind trust.
I have
trust
no
it.
Clue. I've seen a lot of him on YouTube and he looks like Pelé. But obviously, I don't know. Look, what I would say...
Sorry. We just got to revisit that.
Go on, what?
Why do you think he's a star signing? I've seen a lot of him on YouTube, and I think he's like Pelé.
Andy, it was a joke. It was a joke. Do you want my serious answer?
Yeah, go on.
My serious answer is, I have faith in Brighton and Hove Albion's recruitment team.
As you should.
For them to spend that amount of money on an 18-year-old, to me, makes me comfortable to be patient and wait and see what happens. Even if you just look at him, he clearly has the physicality that a lot of young players don't have, okay? So he's big, he's strong. I say big, but he's big enough, strong enough. Clearly, they're trying to get him up to a physical state to be in line with the rest of the Brighton players. A Brighton team that last season ran more than 80% of all the other teams in the Premier League. So they were in the top running stats. This season, from what I can see already, they're running more than any other team. So it's going to take them a few weeks to get up to speed. But I really think for Brighton to have invested that much money in someone so young, to me, makes me feel like I've got to back him and say, yeah, I think he will be our star signing come the end of the season.
Next category.
What's the next category?
Breakout star.
Oh, breakout star. Okay, so I think I need to clarify here because I've got two written down. I just want to make sure that I'm doing this right when I pick one. When we say breakout star, we don't necessarily mean like a youth player that we have never seen before. We just mean, what exactly do you mean?
Well, someone who's had a season that defines them as the player.
Okay.
So
we haven't seen much of them, or we haven't seen them before.
Yeah.
So it's like their debut.
This is their year.
Yeah. Okay.
Not necessarily that they haven't been there before.
Okay.
It's like it's the season.
This
that
is the one.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So who have you gone for? What Palace player are you going to pick?
Romain Essay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good shout. I see what you mean there.
I.e., we signed him last year. Yeah. He's had glimmers throughout the back end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
He got subbed off as a sub after Glasner losing his stuff.
That was him, wasn't it?
And
hopefully he's learned his lesson.
I'm hoping he's learned his lesson because we would have finished probably at least a place higher if he hadn't have done that. But anyway, but I think he will get his chance to shine this year because, look, Neil, as it stands at the moment, my friend, we have 17 players in the squad.
Yeah.
With two of them being picked off by some of the big six at the moment. We could have 15 players in the squad by the end of the week. And we've got something like six games over 3 weeks with two or three days in between each game. This kid's going to get his chance to shine at some point in some game.
Mm.
And I believe he's got all the potential to be a very, very talented midfielder. And potentially, we do have a genuine replacement for Eze lined up in him if he comes good.
Well, he's going to get plenty of chances this season with the Conference League. I mean, you know, you're going to have lots of games to play.
Yep.
Okay. Do you want to hear my one?
No.
I didn't think you would.
Go on.
So people are going to moan at me now because it's not like he's a young player or anything, but I think from a breakout point of view, the Premier League is finally going to see Ferdi Kadioglu. I keep talking about him because he means a lot to me. We all know what happened last season. He ended up with six appearances. And we were so excited to see him, but he got six appearances, got injured at Liverpool away, didn't see him for the rest of the season. That was like November, I think, the Liverpool away. And then that was it was gone. So I think he is the missing piece to what could be a much better balanced side with him in it. I honestly believe if they play him at right back, he probably won't, let's be honest, Herzler. He'll probably play, I don't know, the goalkeeper at right back or something. But if he plays Kadioglu at right back, I think it will make the side so much more balanced. And I think this season will be the season, if he gets lots of games under his belt, everybody will be looking at him going, wow, that's the guy that we remember from the World Cup. That was the one that we were excited about. But yeah, breakout star, Ferdi Kadioglu.
So that's the question, isn't it? Is it going to be the missing piece or gone missing again? Yeah. That's the question. Let's find out. Cool. So, and then the last one that I wanted to find out really, Neil, was just so that we could genuinely embarrass ourselves at the end of the season, is outrageous prediction.
Okay, yeah.
Right, yeah. Outrageous prediction.
Yeah, but still Palace-Brighton-wise, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, go on. What have you gone for? How outrageous is your one?
Less outrageous than it would have been this time last year.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is going to be to do with the trophy, isn't it, or something? What is it?
I believe that, presuming that Glasner sticks around...
Yeah.
Based on the current uncertainty over the next 2 weeks.
He's not staying.
Presuming that he stays around to see us through the campaign.
Yeah, okay.
We are fighting on four fronts.
What?
We are fighting on four fronts.
What are you talking about? What's the four fronts?
Premier League.
You're not fighting for the Premier League, Andy.
I'm fighting for it. I think everyone wants to win
it,
don't they?
You think Palace are going to win the Premier League?
I don't think that. You
think they will be in the fight?
But we're fighting on four fronts.
Okay. Yeah,
right? We're fighting on four fronts.
Fighting relegation, right? Maybe.
And out of them four fronts, one of them will end up in our trophy cabinet.
Wow. Okay, so you're going for another trophy. I mean, to be fair, that's not that far off when you've got the Farmers League to play. So... the one that West Ham won,
I actually,
as we call it.
I genuinely believe that we will win that because
so
there is a... I think
it's scaring the hell out of me because I hate the fact that you're in the Conference League.
But you just think about it, don't you? You think about the fact that actually the bookies think that we've got a very good chance anyway because it's the, as you said the previous weeks, it's like it's the British team in there and it's like we're technically a higher level playing in terms of the Premier League teams.
Andy, seriously, when we think of the Conference League, right?
Yeah.
There should be absolutely no excuse for Crystal Palace not to at least get to the semi-final, if not the final.
Yeah. No, I agree. But
the pressure is on you now to win it.
Oh, I don't know, though.
You're the favourites. The pressure is all on you. But if you don't win it, you're absolute failures.
No, I disagree with
you
that.
You will be a laughing stock.
I don't think
everyone
you're in the position to talk about failure at the moment, my friend. But what I do believe is that Glasner is clearly a cup expert, right?
Yeah,
we know that,
right?
He's a cup expert. He finds a way to get this stuff done.
Yeah. Outrageous prediction, then, is that what? You're going to win a trophy this season?
All I'm committing to is we're going to win a trophy this season.
Okay. I mean,
already got it.
Like you say, it's not that outrageous, is it? Oh, God. It's not a trophy.
No jokes. I actually did write that before we won the Charity Shield, but it's not that one.
That's just a pre-season. Okay, so my outrageous prediction, because it's a bit of a weird one.
Go on.
I think by the time the end of the season comes...
Where are you going with this?
I think Fabian Hörsler...
No.
Will be talked about as possibly taking the Arsenal job.
I wasn't going that way with that. I thought you were going to say he's not going to make it to the end.
No, I think that he will be talked upon as possibly taking the next big job in the Big Six, whoever that might be. Probably Arsenal, in my opinion. Possibly Newcastle. Possibly Spurs. But I think one of the big, big teams will... lose their manager or will decide to leave their manager, and Fabian Hörsler, right near the end of the season, will be looked upon as possibly one of the ones that are going to be taking that position. There you go. That's my outrageous prediction.
Wow. Okay. Like it.
You're stuck with that. You're just shocked, aren't you?
I thought you were going to say that he was going to get sacked at some point during the season poor run in the middle of the year.
We don't sack managers, really. It's hard. It's very difficult for us to sack managers because most of them get nicked. So, because they're so good. Right, let's move on. Generic predictions. So predictions for the rest of the Premier League. I thought we'd go a little bit more obvious here are some of the things we probably do need to make predictions on.
Yeah.
The obvious one, I think we should just go straight off the bat. Premier League winners. I'm dreading to ask you, do you think Palace are going to win?
No.
No, okay, good. Because you were saying they were challenging for the Premier League.
No, but fighting. You've got to go. Mate, there's no, I'll tell you something now. In my life, I've never done anything without wanting to win it.
Okay.
So why would, as, I'll tell you now, Oliver Glasner will not be sat at that training facility going, we don't want to win the Premier League. We don't think we can win it. He'll mm-hmm. think we could win the Premier League.
Okay, good.
That is a winning mentality, Neil.
Yes, of course it is. Yeah. Premier League winners this season, who do we think it's going to be, Andy? What have you gone for?
Well, I put this together actually before going to the Community Shield, and I said Liverpool because I obviously, you know, Wirtz, Kerkez, Frimpong, Ekitike.
Yeah, the wonderful palindrome that he is.
And I just thought to myself, with all of that, and then of course they're probably going to nick Gehi, which we'll talk about in a minute. Mm. I think there's another defender coming in as well. But then also there's the other part of me is thinking, that's a lot of disruption.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And, yeah.
But I do think that potentially they'll get enough. I think Arsenal will be close this year though. I really do. Mm. But I'm going to go Liverpool.
Okay.
Only a couple of points in it. Like end of season, final day.
Yeah.
They get over the edge.
So I'm torn, if I'm honest, because as you were talking about Liverpool, I think most people are looking at it going, wow, what have Liverpool done in the transfer market? They were already fantastic and now they're pushing on. And so I do agree that they are going to be the one to beat. I can't see them dropping anywhere apart from first or second. So I agree with that. But do you know where I'm going to go? I'm going to go with my old reliable. I honestly think Pep is not too old. He's not over the hill, and I think he's going to reinvent himself again. And I think we'll probably see something different again, some new style or something that's a little bit off, something we haven't seen before. And I think Pep hates the concept of losing at any time. So I'm going with Man City. I've got a sneaky suspicion that we might see Rodrigo from Real Madrid join Man City very soon. And I think, yeah, that's where I'm going. I think Man City will be back.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
So
we'll
like
see.
That.
We'll see. What was the next one?
The relegated three.
Oh, yes.
Now, this would normally be seen as a prerequisite, right? Because, I mean, I can't remember the official stats, but is it not like in the last 6 years, all the bottom, the people who came up went straight back down?
Close. Yeah, most of them, yeah.
So it's been a long time since one of the existing Premier League teams went down.
Who's going to get relegated then?
Okay, here we go. Sunderland.
Right.
Leeds.
Yeah.
West Ham.
Oh, a little one at the end there.
Yeah.
Okay. Sunderland leads West Ham. Okay. Go on. You've got to say it. It's prediction time. You've got to say stuff.
I just think
a statement.
I think that they've been dicing with it for a while.
Yeah, true.
And I think I was not convinced by Potter last year.
No. I don't think anyone is in their first season, I think, with
Kudus
Potter.
Kudus has gone to Spurs.
Yeah.
And I just feel, I mean, it's still early on. A lot can happen, especially because West Ham are fishing in the same pond as us at the moment, yeah, in terms of transfers and things like that. But look, I just think that if you dice around that, and Everton were in that period, weren't they, at one point as well, yeah, right? Where it's like, oh my God, are you going to go down? Mm. But if you're playing around that way for too long, it will happen eventually. I think that Burnley will stay up.
Wow. Okay. So I've gone slightly different to you. I've gone for Leeds mm-hmm. to be relegated, Burnley to be relegated, but I've gone with Wolverhampton Wanderers to be relegated.
It's not a bad shout. I'll be honest with you. I was torn between the two.
So I think Sunderland have bought really well in this window. And it's not always about spending loads of money, but it's about who you buy. And I had a quick look at some of the players, right? So they've got Diarra, who they got from Strasbourg, fantastic central midfielder, can run and run and run. Obviously, they've got Simon Adingra from Brighton as well.
Yeah.
I think the biggest, as long as he stays fit, I think the biggest purchase for them, only 15 million, but they've got Granit Xhaka. And mentality monster that he is, he wants to come back to the Premier League. He's an older head. He's won everything. He's experienced. I just think that's a fantastic buy. There's a few other players as well that they've got. They brought in Mark, I don't know how you pronounce his name. Is it Gowie? The Chelsea centre forward that's on loan as well.
Oh, yeah.
There's just a few players that I just think they're really sensible buys in the way that they play football. They play really good football. They'll be exciting this year. And I think they'll stay up. Bottom line is, you say Sunderland, Leeds, West Ham, and I say Leeds, Wolves and Burnley. Right, first manager to be sacked. Who's going to win the sack race?
Keith Andrews.
You think it's going to be the Brentford manager?
I mean, wasn't he there? I mean, I don't claim to have the best knowledge on Brentford, but wasn't he their set-piece manager?
Well, he was their set-piece coach, but he was also a first-team coach. He's been in coaching for lots of teams. He played for Brighton at one point. He got his badges a few years ago.
Oh, that's just confirmed it then. He's off.
I went with Daniel Farke.
Oh.
Leeds are now part of, or I say now, they've been part of it for a few years, but now they're in the Premier League. They're part of the Red Bull family. And I just feel like...
Oh, let's talk about motor club ownership. Come on.
I think that Leeds finally getting to the Premier League again, they won't want to lose that position. Daniel Farke is a very good championship manager. He's never had much luck in the Premier League. He's going to be put out to dry after about 8 or 9, 10 games when they haven't won any of them or something stupid like that. And they'll make a decision quite quickly and get rid of him. So for me, yeah, I think the first one to be sacked this season will be Daniel Farke. Right, what's the last one we were going to talk about?
Well, it's actually two more. But
oh, is there two?
Yeah. Okay. Well, mate, it's a really, really simple question, Neil.
Yeah.
Who's finishing higher, Brighton or Palace, in the Premier League?
Right, we probably know what each of us are going to say here, so...
That you've made an assumption there.
Okay. What do you think is going to be the final positions for Palace and Brighton? Who's going to finish higher?
Disclaimer.
Oh, hello. Why are we putting disclaimers on it?
I don't want this to happen.
Well, obviously.
Hang on. You just said, at the audacious statement, when I said about fighting for the Premier League, right? And clearly, Palace will not win the Premier League, right? Although Leicester did say the same thing, probably.
We can't keep bringing Leicester out.
But we ain't going to win the Premier League. So, but what we are going to do, potentially, is compete really well on other fronts.
Yeah, fair
and
point.
I believe that we are going to struggle because we've got a small squad. Unless, of course, we bring in loads of new players, which is going to be loads of disruption. I think our league form is going to take a dip this year.
I
genuinely believe that. Yeah. I think that there's people and supercomputers that disagree with us. I think the supercomputer states that we're going to finish one place above Brighton in seventh, which we can debate in a minute. But I actually think that we will pretty much finish the mid-table or
12th.
Somewhere around that mark, because I just can't see us being able to sustain everything that we need to do if we continue to go on in Europe with the sort of size of the squad that we've
got. If you look at what happened last season with Tottenham and Manchester United,
yeah,
right, Crystal Palace win the Conference League. Who cares? As long as you're not 18th, 19th or 20th, who cares where you finish?
Absolutely no one, Neil. And that's
you'll win
my
the Conference
point.
League. You'll be then in the Europa League anyway next season. Like, that's all you've got to aim for. Not, I say all, but you know what I mean? Like, you've got the golden ticket there in some respects.
The point being is that our best chance to get into Europe next year is to win Europe.
Yep.
Let's be honest, right?
Totally.
That's easier than playing 18 games.
That's why I was so desperate
games,
at the end of last season to get into that 8th or 7th, you know, to get to that point. Because if you get to the Conference League, you've got a golden ticket for the next few seasons in some respects.
So my audacious statement on this one is, who's going to finish higher, Brighton or Palace? I actually do believe that Brighton will have a good season next year.
Yeah.
And for the reasons of, please don't hate me for saying this, you ain't got European football, mate.
No,
so
I totally
get
agree.
To focus on your full focus on the Premier League. You might have a nice cup run, whatever, but I think Brighton will finish above Palace, and I would genuinely throw up when I see it, but I think that's going to happen.
Well, look, I'm not going to change your mind, and I'm not going to disagree with you. Obviously, I think Brighton will finish above Palace as well for the exact reasons that you've just stated. There's no disagreement there. It's lovely that we're both in agreement. You mentioned
it's not lovely.
It is. It's wonderful.
Although I don't agree with Gary, by the way, about you finishing, what was it, top four? He's having a laugh.
He said we'd be fighting for Champions League, which I think still is fifth, I think, going to be this season as well. So if we're around fifth or sixth again.
Where do you think you'll be?
Oh, it's too early to tell, mate.
Come on.
I'll tell you when the window's shut and see what business we've got, because I think it really depends on who leaves and who stays.
I believe you've got top eight in you.
Oh, I think now we've got top eight, absolutely. But I think there's a possibility we go higher if we keep certain players. So
let's see.
We'll have to wait and see. You said something about a supercomputer.
Yeah, look, the supercomputer, do you know it works?
The Opta one.
Yeah, the Opta one, where it predicts, you know, thousands of outcomes, and then it gives it the average of where they believe everyone will finish, and the probability of you finishing in that position. So yeah. I can tell you now that Palace have got a probability of 2.9% to win the Premier League. Brighton have got a probability of 2.2% to win the Premier League, based on the Opta analyst data. Liverpool have got a 28.5%.
Wow. Okay. So it thinks Liverpool's going to win the league.
Yeah, it thinks Liverpool's going to win. It thinks Burnley, Leeds and Sunderland are going down. Right. Where do you think Brighton are?
Well, you sort of mentioned it there. So what, eighth then it thinks?
It thinks Brighton are eighth and it thinks Palace are seventh.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I mean, that was a shocker for me, and I'm confident about all this sort of stuff.
So who's... Hang on, let me... Oh, you've got it here. Let me have a look. So Tottenham are going to be 14th, apparently.
Which... and we look at Man United in 12th.
Man United 12th.
Because this is all based on the previous results, previous... You know, and you think about the fact that...
Yeah, it's rubbish though, isn't it? I mean, I did look at the previous seasons...
Predictions to see how it ended up last season.
So last season, if we were talking about that and what they predicted at the beginning of the season, the Opta analysts and the supercomputer, it predicted that Man City would win the league. Liverpool were going to be third, by the way. It predicted that Manchester United and Tottenham Hotspur would be sixth and seventh. Remember them? And
what this doesn't take into account is Europe, though, right?
Well, this is what it predicts. Yeah. So Crystal Palace were going to be ninth. And Brighton were going to be 11th.
Okay.
So it also predicted that Nottingham Forest, I think like we all thought, were going to be 17th, so near the bottom, and it didn't happen either.
Oh, God,
so
I hope they do.
You can see how way off it is, really, in the reality of it. I get the probability, but come on, that's ridiculous.
I respect you for your homework. Yeah. What I will do when I get home, though, tonight, is have a look at previous seasons to that, because we all know that last year was an absolutely
crazy year
with Man U, Tottenham and all the other bits and pieces. I think it's normally closer than
that. Of course, I agree. And I think ultimately, when you look at it overall, we know if you sort of take two or three places either side, you say those teams are going to be around that area, those teams are going to be
around there. It's no more accurate than bookies' odds, is it?
No. Like, it's interesting, though, that you said that it thinks that Palace will be higher than Brighton and Palace will get seventh. And for everything that you've just mentioned around why you think Palace's league position will falter, I think you're absolutely right.
But it hasn't taken into account Europe, Neil.
No,
and that's the thing. And I think I do believe that we would have a chance to do that and genuinely push on and have an amazing season if nothing changed. But Europe's going to ruin it.
Right, we've really overrun. So what was the last section?
It was purely surprise team.
Oh, we've sort of mentioned that already, haven't we? Well, my surprise team, just to put it out there, in black and white is going to be, well, should I say red and white?
Oh.
And black. Sunderland. So I think the Black Cats are going to be the surprise team in the sense that I think they're going to be finishing mid-table.
I've changed my mind instantly. I'm going off script. My surprise team is going to be Brentford.
Hang on.
In a really bad way.
So you...
Everyone's going to be absolutely shocked how a top half team has absolutely folded and is going to end up fighting for their lives in the second half of the season.
Fair enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Neil.
We'll take a little break and then we'll come back with a quick roundup of the rumours. Let's finish off this episode with some transfer rumours. And I know they're probably all bad news for you. I've got a few bad news ones as well. But
is no news bad news? I don't know.
Been plenty of bad news for you this pre-season. So. Crystal Palace rumours, what we got?
Well, I'm still waiting on for the last 4 weeks, every week I've gone, and there's a deal that's going to be probably announced by the time this pod comes out, which is my kind of repetitive saying. None of them have actually materialised. Look, I think, as it stands at the moment, no ins, not really any rumours. It's really hard to find a rumour.
Yeah, it's all very quiet, isn't it?
Because of the two big things that I'm about to mention and all the other stuff. I'm hoping that maybe that team that work in that office up in London at Palace might end up kind of doing something else. Maybe they'll go to work tomorrow and go, should we look at them transfers now? But anyway, look, it's looking very much today like Marc Guéhi is on his way.
Yeah.
There is an agreement in place between Guéhi and Liverpool.
Yeah.
And no confirmed or accepted bid, but rumoured to be around the £35 million mark is probably what it's going to end up at. But it's not a done deal. The players agreed.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds sensible, though, around that sort of amount for a player that's got less than 12 months left. I know he's a great player, but realistically, you know, you've got to get something for him. If he's not going to sign a new contract, we've talked about this end-to-end, but you've got to get something for him. And, you know, it'll be a shame, but you just need to get it done so you can sign some new players, mate.
Yeah, and look, there is genuinely no bad blood, I don't think, from a single Palace fan that he would leave to the team we just beat in the Community Shield.
So. Fair enough. Anyone else?
Eze.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, where do we start with this?
I mean, that's still floating around, though, in summer. It's been a little bit more sort of obvious that something is happening now, isn't it?
Well, it's because of the whole Europe thing now, and I think that's all been done. And obviously, even more hype now because of the fact we won something else. And I mean, mate, there is genuinely Arsenal fans that are walking around with his name on the back of their shirt. I've seen it online. It's just ridiculous. I believe,
it's not done and dusted, is it? There seems another team in there now as well.
Still no bid accepted. Apparently, Tottenham are now in talks with Palace and are trying to broker a deal.
Right.
But they've got no intention, apparently, of paying the release clause. So what's the point in having a conversation? Arsenal are too busy spending all the rest of their money elsewhere. So I still look, here's my very, very simple view on this.
Yep.
I knew Guéhi was off when I was stood on that terrace at Wembley and Glasner subbed him on 85 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? And he got a round of applause. And why would he have done that?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
No, I agree.
Right?
I agree.
So you go, great. Eze did not take a bow. And I do believe he's an Arsenal fan, is what the rumours are.
I
think he wants to, I think he would go there, but I don't, Eze will not force a deal.
No.
So if it happens, it happens. But the word on the street is it will only happen if we get the replacement in.
Mm.
And as it stands, I haven't seen a single player of any legitimacy being linked with our club last week that looks like it's anything real.
Mm.
So that's all I've got.
It rumbles on.
That's all I've got, Neil.
Okay,
and
mate.
I'm a bit annoyed.
Well, two quick ones for me before I get into the big one. So the first one to probably talk about is Malik Yalcoui. Finally, it looks like we've got a decision on what's going to happen with him. We were wondering whether he was going to stay around for a bit longer, but as of this evening, I've just been told that he is looking to have a medical tomorrow on a season-long loan at Swansea, which I think's a good one for him.
Okay.
Championship, get a bit of British League experience.
Yeah.
He's going to play every week, so I think that's a good idea personally. That's one out. The other one, which I haven't spoke about for ages because he's been a bit injured and other things, is Julio Enciso. Looks like we finally got an option for him to be sold with the Brazilian side Palmeiras that are looking to do a deal with us for him as well. So I would expect both of those, especially Yalcoui, to get done very quickly. And then finally, the big one that's been all over social media the last couple of days, which is Carlos Baleba. Yeah, laugh it up, flyboy. My take on this, everyone knows what's going on. Manchester United are supposedly in talks with the player, and I say the player loosely, it's obviously with his agents or whatever, to have a discussion about, do you want to come to Man United? This is how much you're going to get paid. Do you fancy it? And the player's gone, yeah, quite like the idea of that. He's made no... He's not ever said anything about the fact that he wants to stay at Brighton his whole career. No. That's how every Brighton player is when we buy them. We know that. However, what I would say is I think the club, from my understanding, has always made it very clear that he was going to stay this season, and next summer, as it were, would be the opportunity for him to look at opportunities and see what clubs want to take him, et cetera, et cetera. It's the way we work. It's the way we've always done it. Third season is sort of the one where we sort of look and see what's going on. From a contractual point of view, you've also got to remember that he signed a contract that is until 2028 with an option of an extended year. The club has an option of another. So theoretically, that's 2029 from a contractual point of view. It's a long way. It's a big contract still there, sitting there. Brighton have no need to sell. the player isn't going to go on strike or do anything like that unless the agent does something stupid. I just don't see it happening in that sense. The only way that this is going to happen is if Manchester United somehow find another 120, 110 million, something stupid like that, which isn't how much he's worth, because he's worth less than that. He's not worth that much. But because of the contract situation and the fact that Brighton don't care who's coming for them, the player knows he's supposed to be staying. It's up to Man United to make a decision and see if they've got the money. I don't think they've got enough money.
2 points from me.
Go on.
If Man United stump up 75, 80 million,
yeah,
you're taking that.
No.
I genuinely believe you will.
Absolutely not. And they won't. The club won't. The club won't.
Come on. 75, 80 million.
They don't
million.
Need to, Andy, because next season, Man City will be in for him. Liverpool, other players, they'll have a bargaining. They'll have an auction for him, like they did with the Caicedo. There's no need for this season, this late in the window, to sell him. They won't sell him. They don't need the money. We're already surplus 200 million.
Yeah.
Up. We don't need it.
But turning down 80 million.
It's not turning it down. It's postponing it, mate.
Well.
Until it's 130 next season.
Let's see. But also,
I guarantee you right now, and I will state my career in this podcast on it.
Oh, God.
No, I mean it. That if the number, if something does happen in this window, if the number, sale number and the add-ons and everything, all that sort of stuff, if that isn't over 100 million, he won't be going.
Mm.
Guaranteed. It's no way in the world.
It's an audacious statement.
I will bet my career on this podcast on it.
Okay.
Yeah, I've said it now.
Anyone out there who's a Brighton fan, I'm looking for a new podcast partner.
It's not happening, mate. Not this. If Man United put the money up, then it could happen. Absolutely.
Mm. But the second part of my statement is, why on earth would you go to Man United?
I mean, they're forming a good team, but right at this moment, that's another good reason, Andy. Why would you make the risk now as a young player of going
European
to Man
football.
United? Yeah. Why would you take that risk right at this moment? Wait till next season.
Well, money.
Yeah, but it's not. I just don't think the timing is right for anyone. Yeah. I think, you know, the agent's in an opportunity. Man United quite rightly want to try and get him. I just don't think they're going to be able to afford him this window.
Mm. Well, look, I hope you're right. And
I will be.
Yeah, we'll go from there.
I'm staying positive.
Good. Good.
So that's it for this week's Seagull Eagle. Thanks for listening and for sticking with us through the chaos.
Make sure you follow us on socials, X, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, or just tell an absolute stranger on the bus. We don't care.
Next week, the Premier League season finally kicks off. And we'll be reviewing Brighton's game with Fulham.
And Palace's clash with Chelsea. Plus, hopefully, a bit more transfer news to pick apart and overreact to.
Until then, see you!